again, that's the Kiki music. What does it mean? It means you are experiencing Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week on Pop Culture Happy Hour is Make You Do Something You Don't Want to Do Week here around the table. We're going to start off with a review of some of the new DC comics that were rebooted recently that you may have heard about. We're also going to talk a little bit about We, Believe It or Not, Made Trey and Glenn Do Something They Didn't Want to Do Again for the second week in a row. This time, we made him watch football, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And as always, what's making us happy this week? But first, why don't we introduce everybody? Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a writer and editor with NPR Music.
Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor at NPR.org.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and, appropriately enough, comic books for the NPR website.
And speaking of comic books, orient us a little bit about how this got started, this comics project that
Remind us why we're doing this.
Okay. I'm detecting a note of dismay.
Not at all.
All right. So last month, there was a wholesale relaunch of the entire DC universe, the fictive universe in which characters that we know, like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, live and laugh and play and learn. Some old titles went away, and they were replaced with a bunch of new titles, but all of them, whether they're old or new, were started from issue number one. So, characters like Batman and Green Lantern didn't change much, but just about every other major character has been rebooted in some way, such that this first issue is as new to me as a nerd as it is to the three of you
as different kinds of nerds.
That's right.
So we're all kind of in the same boat. The aim here, according to the sheaves of press releases that came out of the DC Comics offices,
they sure did,
is to offer new readers a jumping on point for every character at the same time. And also, at the same time, round out their standard superhero offerings by kind of edging into different genres like science fiction, horror, western, and war comics.
Now, do the westerns and the war comics, are they interlocking pieces of this universe, or are they completely discrete universes?
They're part of the same universe, but they don't
necessarily... But Superman doesn't show up in Chaps and with six guns ablazing?
We're talking issue one.
He does get a mention in one of the ones that I looked at, which is all about a war among the vampires.
There you go.
Yeah, and he turns up in Swamp Thing as well.
Oh, awesome.
They see this as an opportunity to make the DC Universe a more diverse place, and we can talk about that a little bit because that seems to be something that remains to be seen. At the same time, they've also instituted same-day digital distribution. So you don't have to go to a comic shop anymore to get these books. You can just download it if you have a tablet. We're not going to talk about that too much today, but that is, for my money, a major milestone that's going to change things in a big way in the weeks and months to come.
Like by squashing businesses?
And I was going to say not necessarily for the better.
We'll get to that in a bit. Today we're talking content, and we're talking content from a new reader's perspective. So DC was kind enough to send me all 52 issues in question. I brought them into NPR, spread them out on a conference table, and asked my distinguished colleagues, and also Thompson, to take a look.
I was going
to
say, where are they?
And pick two books each. As if you had just wandered into a comic shop and had no prior knowledge. So the first thing I want to talk to you guys about is what made you pick the books you picked, and let's start there. We're going to start talking to Linda, Stephen, and Trey, who I classify as new readers. Then we're going to throw it up into esteemed producer Mike Katzeff, who I classify as a lapsed reader, someone who's gone away from the fold and is returning. So let's start with you, Trey Graham. What'd you pick?
Believe it or not, I read six comics for the sake of this exercise and narrowed it down to two.
Okay.
What they all seem to have in common is Studly Mustly Bits.
Good. Well, sure.
Bits?
I am not bits of what?
Bits of superhero. There's a lot of superhero here on the cover, is what I'm saying. I looked at the Savage Hawkman. I looked at Superboy. I looked at the new Superman action comics. And I looked at iVampire. Those are the ones I decided not to talk
about. iVampire, incidentally, is the toothiest of the new Apple computers.
Indeed.
There we go. Yes.
And I settled on... Slow clap for Linda Holmes. I settled on Aquaman, on whom I have had a crush, like Glenn Weldon. Since I was a small child.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And Mr. Terrific.
What about those two books made you choose them?
Well, like I said, Aquaman, aggressive, angry-look cover art, and an old favorite character that I hadn't checked in with in a long time. And Mr. Terrific, the cover art is kind of a circuit board with this hunky African-American fellow on the cover, and it's called Mr. Terrific.
Okay, there you go. So familiarity and buffness.
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen Thompson, same thing?
Yes, of course. I picked Green Arrow and Swamp Thing.
Okay. Okay.
Both names that have been floating around in the primordial soup of my comic book intensive upbringing, mm-hmm. but neither of which seem to have entered the public consciousness to the point where there are a whole bunch of movies about them. And so what I figured is, at the very least, I would get a jump on the summer blockbusters of tomorrow.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And also Green Things. Linda Holmes?
I chose Superman and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And Superman, I do not have a history with comics, but I do have a history with Superman. Not only the Christopher Reeve movies, which I think are lovely, but I was, back in the very early days of my internet slash pop culture fandom, I was a super fan mm-hmm. of the Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher,
about this,
Lois
yes.
and
yes,
Clark.
Yes, we have.
So I actually have relatively strong feelings about this. So again, I like to have a little bit of context and a kind of a jumping off point. With Wonder Woman, there were certainly some of the ones that featured women, to give away the store a little bit, had already been written about as being mostly kind of like boobs and stuff like that.
Catwoman.
Yeah. The Wonder Woman one is a little bit different. The aesthetic looked a little bit different to me. And plus, I think Wonder Woman is just kind of a cool, interesting character. Mm-hmm. As you have sometimes mentioned, has this interesting history being, you know, made out of clay. I was kind of interested in her, so I picked them partly on really who the character was right. as opposed to, you know, anything else.
Good. Okay. So familiarity is also a thing that we're kind of picking up here.
Absolutely.
Mike Katziff, what'd you pick?
Like Trey, I also went for more than two books.
Nerd.
I picked four books to choose from. I picked Stormwatch and OMAC, two projects I wasn't particularly familiar with. And the two I want to talk about are Batman and Robin and Animal Man. And
Animal Man, best member of Dr. Teeth and the Electric Man.
I picked these for two reasons. One, I picked Batman and Robin because it's probably the character I'm most familiar with. Batman is probably the most popular DC character, I would say, these days. It's had the most successful movie franchises. And so I just wanted to see what they were doing to either make Batman new or easier to understand for new readers. And I picked Animal Man. As a former comic reader, I remember the old Grant Morrison series Animal Man, which was, I think, in the late 80s, which was very surreal and bizarre. And so it sort of has a history of being more than just kind of a superhero story, but something more than that.
So you were interested in sort of rejiggering stories that you had already been told.
I think that's right.
I think several of us wanted.
Well, yeah, because I had kind of almost the opposite mentality, which is I feel like I've seen, even in my limited comic book reading experience, I feel like I've been told the Batman pummels people in a dark alley story
right.
like 100 million times. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so I was really looking for not a story that I had been told
yeah.
before again yeah. and again.
But ideally, I think these are supposed to tell the story in a new way. I mean, one thing that I've was worried about, you know, when they were rebooting everything was, man, we've seen the origin stories of so many of these characters over and over and over again. It felt like it was too repetitive for the same Superman origin story or Batman story again.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they've changed a lot of that stuff enough or modernized it enough.
Well,
to
and not only that, but
interesting.
Not only that, but with Superman at least, they don't start with the origin story. You start right. sort of in the middle.
Right.
I'm sure they will do the origin story,
right?
But they don't do it at the beginning. It's mm-hmm. not like because you're starting from the beginning of the series that you have to start from the earliest chronological point in the story.
Right. This is something I noticed about all the books I looked at. They all the stories started in media res.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, yeah. and I think that makes a lot of sense because what it mostly means is that in the first few pages you get a bunch of exposition. You get
right.
just big chewy mouthfuls of exposition rather than obviously seeing the birth of Superman and
right.
you know and,
right.
and all that. You get a lot of you are a brilliant scientist who works with plants, you know.
The exposition at the beginning of Superman isn't necessarily Superman exposition, it's Daily Planet exposition. It's here's the world as it exists at the beginning of this
right.
comic, as opposed to here's who Superman is and here's how Superman functions. I mean, even though they are reboots, I definitely had the sense that, like, okay, DC expects you to understand that Clark Kent and Superman are the same guy. Spoiler alert! Yeah.
And for a lot of fans, I think it's trying to have you experience how this version is different. So you're
right.
constantly comparing and contrasting what
right.
you sort of know about Superman or Batman or whatever
right.
and how this is just different enough
and I
or
think that's,
tell it in a new way.
And I think that's how they're trying to like not completely leave behind
well, yeah,
existing comic readers because if you start over
right.
with Superman and you have to be like, well, first he lived on Krypton.
Right.
And now you know, he was delivered
by
a stork.
You get the panic sequence
exactly.
on Krypton.
Exactly.
You know,
so you have
bored.
To sort of start like I said, I sense a compromise where they're sort of trying to be like, you basically have to understand who Clark and Lois and Jimmy Olsen and those people are, and then who Superman is, and then you kind of go from there.
And they're not changing the core mythology of these characters.
I thought they were very clever about what they did with Aquaman. Clever, anyway, in a lowbrow sort of way. They join his story, as I've said, right in the middle of a heist. Somebody's like holding up an armored truck or something, and he stops them downtown, which is, you know, your first signal that this is not the Aquaman. You know, right? No. He shows up literally in the middle of downtown, okay. And no one expects him to be there because he's Aquaman.
Right.
And they comment on, why are you not, right. You know, we're not on the bay.
Right.
He only deals with maritime offenses.
Right. Half of this book
he's got
is...
a yellow fringe on his leg.
Exactly. Half of this book is about people's expectations of Aquaman and commenting on the way this character has been perceived throughout comics history.
Right, right.
Well, here's one thing that I noticed about both of the ones that I read. Now, again, I read Green Arrow and Swamp Thing, and I felt like in both of them, the whole first issue was primarily the equivalent of setting up the first big set piece in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very much like an adaptation of a movie that has not existed yet.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a certain amount of, like, you see, you know, Tufts, you know, menacing such and such, and then the bad guy, or the good guy is off in the background, ready to grab the Tufts, and then he goes, boom, biff, pow. Not actually biff pow. they don't do that anymore. It's sort of wrapped up. Or is it? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's very much kind of that first, yeah. You know, so I'd be curious to know how many issues each of these have in mind. How, you know, I have that slight problem with monthly serialized comic books where it's sort of like, well, this has got to get to an end at some point because it's not telling an incredibly complicated story, yeah. But it's going to take a year, 2 years, 5 years, you know, at $3.99 a piece, you know, to tell that story.
Right.
I think at its best, these series can be sort of a good jumping on point for the first story arc. I would disagree a little bit with Steven saying that these series last for years and years and years. Typically, a story arc lasts 4 to 6 issues, and that is your first story. So at least it will come to an end, and they might have some other, you know, lingering plot lines that will continue. Just like a TV series,
right.
You know, they have
right.
small arcs and they have, right. you know, the long game right. arcs.
It's just so bite-sized, I guess. You know, I mean, I read each of these in, you know, 5-10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. These seem,
really flew
these
by.
Seem shorter to me than the comics I remember reading when I was a kid.
Well, I found they really varied, though, because some of them seemed substantially more meaty than others. They didn't all feel equally long. I felt like the Green Lantern one in particular really seemed to kind of, like, fly by. And it was like it was there and then it was gone. Whereas the Superman one, I felt like it stuck around for a while.
Eye Vampire, very strange, very dark. Lots of sort of trying to figure out who is who and yeah. who's allied with who else. The two I settled on to talk about, Mr. Terrific and Aquaman, both went very quickly.
What you guys are picking up on is a difference in pacing, a difference in writing styles. The Superman book that you're talking about, Linda, was co-written by George Perez, who was also the penciler, also the artist. He is known as from his art, I'm just loading the page with all kinds of detail.
Mm-hmm.
What's surprised me is how much narrative he's loading the page mm-hmm. with as well. You'd think that if he's an artist, he would trust his art to do a lot of the work. But that book in particular had multiple narrators loaded down with dialogue. To me, it was a very dense... It was not a fun read to me. It was so loaded down.
But
same thing with iVampire.
It's interesting that you mentioned that he's also the artist, because that was the one where I noticed that if you think of it as a movie... I would have noticed the directing. Mm. I felt like the angles and the points of view were a little bit more creative in that one.
Okay, so now, Mike Katziff, you've heard from these three people who are coming to this form relatively new. They've all read comics before, but like the idea of visiting a serial narrative, you know, chapter by chapter, is something they just haven't done before. You've done that before. How did coming back to this form feel? With these new rebooted characters?
I think when it comes to DC, I'm always going to be a little new to these characters. As a kid, I was more of like an X-Men, Spider-Man type fan. And so these characters feel new-ish. I would say the form itself, both issues that I read did it in very different ways. The Batman and Robin, it seemed like it was continuing a story that I had not already read. It seemed like it was chapter 2 already. In some cases, that can be a good thing because it hits the ground running. In this case, it seemed like there was way too much catch-up to go on because it seems like this did not get a true reboot. It didn't get a true re-envisioning. It just kind of continued what was working before. That can be fine, but I feel like the purpose was to kind of refocus and re-energize. Animal Man, however, seemed like it did everything right. It created a new sort of status quo for this character and introduce you to the dynamics, which in this case is a family drama. He's an actor, he's a stuntman, but he also is a superhero sort of on the side. And so it establishes like his family dynamic and then turns into this really creepy, disturbing, and very surreal horror movie. That's a new direction that this story hasn't totally taken before. So Animal Man works better than probably the Batman, which I think before the reboot was probably working and running, you know, full steam ahead way better than a lot of these were. But after the fact, after they've rebooted, that one seemed more muddled in continuity than something brand new.
Mm-hmm. All right, I have a theory to throw out, a theory for which they kicked me out of the Academy. They called me mad. They called me insane. But here's my theory. This was never about you three. This was never right. about Linda, Steven, and Trays of the world.
When is it?
This was always about Mike. Getting Mike back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A company like DC has to know, they must do the market research to know that they can change the supply all they want, but the demand for the very niche little product that they're coming out with is fixed. There's this myth within the comic book industry that there's this great untapped market for people who want to read these books that we're just not reaching. But I don't imagine that there's that many people out there, more than who are already doing it, who want to schlep to a specialty store to shell out $2.99 for a single chapter of a comic book about superheroes. That is a lot of limiting reagents in that one little sentence.
Right. Yeah.
So they've taken steps. The digital distribution is a big, big step. And that means you don't have to find a comic shop anymore.
Right.
Which will get harder and harder because of the digital distribution.
Exactly. And there are tech gurus out there who maintain, Andy Anatko is one of them, who keeps saying, this is going to change the game in a big way. This is going to broaden the audience for comic books in a huge way that you just don't understand yet. I don't agree with that, but I'm eager to be proven wrong.
Right.
So what is this about? This is about Mike. This is about people who at some point, for whatever reason, puberty, for example, decided that they'd left the flock. Ultimately, this seems like a missed opportunity for me because exactly some of the things you guys were touching on. This is not the game changer that DC would have you believe it is. This niche product is clinging to its very hidebound, insular, that's the thing that really bugs me about this, insular, nerdy little niche. There are no, in this whole launch, any all-ages comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, DC and Marvel both have kids' books. But an all-ages comics, we were looking at this table, Steven, you asked me, is there anything my 10-year-old son could read? And I was like, sure. No. No, there isn't.
Well, and one thing, not to get too far off on a tangent here, but just last night, a friend of ours at Scholastic Books, friend of this podcast, sent me a gigantic box of YA literature, books for kids, books for teenagers, and basically was like, here, use your kids as a focus group. Let me know what they like.
Mm-hmm.
I spread out this gigantic pile of books on the dining room table, and the kids were like, I want this one, I want this one. It was like Christmas morning. When we got around a big table, and you spread out 52 DC comics, it was like, Mr. Tremendous
yeah.
with the
uh-huh.
he has a flaming motherboard.
Exactly.
It's a massive missed opportunity to not try to indoctrinate. I mean, I feel like YA literature has sort of, it seems to me, never been stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it's taken the place of these kinds of stories.
That's a great
point. Think about the way those stories are structured. They're structured in a fashion that could be described as a serial novel.
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know, you've got a cliffhanger at the end of every chapter.
Well, the 39 Clues books,
yeah. which not only tell these sort of self-contained stories, but there are 13 of them at $12.95 a piece or whatever.
And
they fit together as one unified 10-piece story. I mean, my God, when a new one comes out, it's like, oh my God, there's a new one. It comes out, mm-hmm. such and such a date. And this is the market. I feel like the young people of today, not just in my household, but in general.
The young people of today.
Well, I'm 85 years old. Kids these days, I think, are still looking for books.
Right.
And
right.
So why aren't the DCs and Marvels of the world really trying to connect with my nerds?
Exactly. Just to play devil's advocate, they would say, well, we want to reach these kids, but we want to reach teenagers. And what are the teenagers doing nowadays? They're playing video games. That's why in these books there is violence. A really kind of tremendous amount of violence in some cases. Some of these books have a rating of T+, teen+.
Yeah.
But most of these books have a certain amount of violence. And that's because there is this thing that infiltrated superhero comics in the 90s, which is about badassery.
Yeah.
Like, this right. character is cool because he's a badass. That's when all this violence and this kind of grimness came into this form, which started off as a lark.
Mm-hmm.
Started off as full of whimsy and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still the engine of it is this adolescent and, I think, defensive reliance on badassery and violence.
And sex, too.
And sex,
and
exactly.
And boobs and right. Catwoman and Batman.
What is still
I still actually still have that. I still have that reliance.
What's still missing is humor, lightness. Why couldn't there have been some romance comics here? Why couldn't there have been some straight-ahead mystery comics or crime comics?
I mean, they had 52.
Sure, sure. Right. There are books that I recommend. I would recommend Wonder Woman. I liked a lot. The Flash, Batman, Aquaman, Action Comics I liked a lot, Resurrection Man, Justice League Dark.
I feel like you're just making these up. It's like tartar, it's like tartar control Justice League.
Yes, yes, yes. The joke that everybody makes is Justice League Dark with almonds. Swamp Thing and Animal Man is actually
I was going to say, I really dug Swamp Thing. Yeah. I thought Green Arrow could have been generated by an iPhone app.
Exactly.
One of the most generic comic books I've ever read. The Swamp Thing, I thought, boy, you could really do something with this.
Yeah. Are any of you three sold, either by going to a comic book shop or by downloading it on an iPhone? Are any of you going to keep following?
I have actually, while we have been talking, I have downloaded the DC Comics app because I think I might follow. I'll certainly follow Aquaman for a little bit and see how this turns out. I'm curious enough about what they do with Mr. Terrific to see if they can sort of make it slightly less ham-handed than this first issue struck me.
Wonder Woman had, to me, a really different look. It was
the art
a different.
I loved.
The art is really different. I feel like the lines are a little thicker, and it's a little bit more like it's 1 degree closer to like South Park. Yep. You know what I mean? But not in a bad way, not in a clowny looking way. But it's slightly less shaded, which sounds like it would be bad, but it's actually cool. It's distinctive looking.
There is a hyperrealism in a lot of comic book art that is very stylized, and I really dig it. I really dig the look, and I dig the colors in that book also.
Mm-hmm. What I would say is, I would give another couple tries. If I cannot have to go to the store.
Yeah.
And I don't have an iPad. Now, I will eventually have a Kindle tablet.
Mm-hmm.
When that comes along, if it works, then I will I would definitely try.
You can download it on your computer, too.
Yeah.
Your desktop.
Oh, good. That's good to know. Because, the answer is if I don't have to go out and physically buy them, then yes, I enjoyed them both enough that I would give them another shot or two.
All right. That's interesting. So I got a yes from Trey. I got a yes from Linda. Steven?
I mean, I'm certainly notionally open to Swamp Thing. I found Swamp Thing, it had elements of his origin story that I hadn't sort of seen in 50 different superhero, you know, movies and different configurations. I sort of felt like Green Arrow, other than the fact that he has a bow and arrow, there was nothing in that I had not read before.
It was a very forgettable issue. This has been a hugely successful effort on the part of DC Comics. I mean, many of these issues sold over 100,000 copies, and that hasn't happened in years.
Mm-hmm.
They are issue number ones, though, so we can kind of discount that. That's that's a phenomenon that happens whenever you get released in issue number one, especially when you back it up behind the hype.
Right.
So you guys are sort of in. You're gonna poke it around. What about Mike Katziff?
I don't really know. Depending on how they go, if the same writers stick with the series for a while and give it some life and some depth to it, then yes. I mean, traditionally a lot of writers leave after the first few issues anyway. So of the four that I read, I feel like Animal Man would be the most interesting to follow. So
Linda's totally right about the art in Wonder Woman, because I just downloaded it while we were talking. But one thing I noticed that's particularly different is this thing, the guided view, with it's just sort of designed to draw your eye from one place to the other in a way that, you know, sort of mirrors the artist's intentions, I suspect, which is something we should talk about at some point.
Yeah, we should.
We definitely can do that. All right. Well, thank you, Glenn, again for your guidance as we explore the world of comics. I actually found that quite interesting.
Good.
Speaking of quite interesting, but maybe not to you, we're just going to take a couple quick minutes. I don't think we're going to have a lot on this because, frankly, I don't think anything unexpected happened. But as we sometimes do, we decided we would try a little something that is a little out of a couple people's comfort zones. Namely, we gathered at Shea Thompson, and we watched a little football. Now, Stephen, what game did we watch?
Well, it's a little bit like what I call taking the Amish to Times Square.
Yes.
We all got together at Casa de Thompson, Linda and Glenn and Trey and myself, to watch the Green Bay Packers play the Denver Broncos in the game of what Glenn calls the footed ball.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Broncos perform, Stephen Thompson?
Broncos performed. I care how the Packers performed.
How did it end, Stephen?
The final score was good guys the Green Bay Packers. 49, bad guys, or whoever they are. Denver Broncos, 23.
Now,
high-scoring game.
Now, I obviously don't care what Steven thought of this game, because you already know.
Right.
And I don't care what I thought of this game, because I don't care. Glenn, do you have any quick reflections on football for us?
Well, you know, I have a long history with this game. It is an antagonistic history. You know, I was 6 years old when my parents dragged me to my first high school football game. We had season tickets at the Vet in Philadelphia. We were up in the 700 section. We were pretty much on the last row, the last highest section. One more row, we were out of the park.
You pondered jumping off the...
Well, I met my very first obnoxious drunk at Veterans Stadium. You know, when they would watch every week at home, they would just scream at the television. You know, it was... I still, on a crisp fall day, when I close my eyes, I can still hear my mother going, "Get it off, Jaworski!" Which is troubling on
disturbing
several levels.
Wow.
But I certainly hope that was about football.
But I did have a good time on Sunday, and I think it's a combination of two things. It's the company, and it's the beer. When it comes to the company, it needs to be good company, but not a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to beer, there needs to be a lot of it. I don't care how good it is.
So this is something I believe we said both of these things about Oscar party watching too.
No, exactly.
So it's good that we approach this event in the same sort of cultural phenomenon kind of way.
Well, and in fact,
I do have a complaint about the snacks, which were few and scanty.
Okay. Should be pointed out that, like an Oscar party, somebody in this room may have uttered the exclamation, "Who is styling this man?"
That was me.
That
was me, Trey Graham. I will totally own that. But in my defense, there was an ESPN anchor.
No,
it was not an ESPN anchor. It was an NFL Red Zone anchor.
Oh,
it was
and a
Scott
Red Zone.
Hansen. It was Stephen
Spielberg. Who looked fine?
He had both of his suit jacket buttons buttoned while he was sitting down. He just looked untidy.
The point being
that it was an utter cliche, everybody. If you ever want to know what it's like to watch football with these people, it's exactly what you think it's like.
Stephen means Trey and Glenn specifically.
I would just like to point out that for all of my fashion commentary and my disappointment, which I shared with Glenn Weldon, that there was not a single shaving commercial.
Yeah. That's the thing that used to drag me through each one, was the shirtless dude standing over the sink, stroking their lantern jaw.
Exactly. I was, despite all of that nonsense, able to answer correctly when Glenn Weldon expressed uncertainty about the meaning of a pick six.
That's right. True.
Exactly. Yeah.
You did correctly explain the pick six.
You both have been football adjacent enough in your lives.
That is true. Like Glenn Weldon, I had an early and unpleasant formative experience with football when I went to a New Orleans Saints game in the Superdome. This would have been the year that the King Tut exhibition was on tour. I don't remember exactly when that was, because that's why we were there.
Sure.
We went to see the King Tut exhibition.
Sure.
And we took in a Saints game. And like Glenn's family, mine was in the cheap seats, and I decided to express my interest and involvement in the game by standing up and doing an I Dream of Jeannie blink to help the Saints move the ball further towards the goal.
And it helped.
It disturbed my mother somewhat, but I feel that it helped.
Well, that's excellent.
Here's what I learned. If you had asked me what the most advertised thing is during an NFL game, I would have said beer. I would have said trucks.
Yes.
I would have said I would have said life insurance, you know, a get-go.
Sure.
It's the NFL.
Yeah.
It's
just
commercials for the NFL. For this thing you're watching, watch more of it, because here's this thing that you're watching
and
again.
And get the app and get the online experience and all that
stuff. I will say that there was a very impressive truck commercial, but I want to say that the Ford truck, or maybe it was Chevy, I don't know, the Ford truck ideal of manliness is maybe not what it was, because they were advertising this gigantic truck which came with Wi-Fi.
That's true.
Right.
Onboard Wi-Fi.
The refs had sleeves which were distractingly blousy.
It's true.
I'll just say that.
It's true.
There was more. It was becoming
completely cliche. It was like the pirate.
Now.
It was the pirate shirt.
Because I was looking for my favorite NFL referee. Yes, I have one. Is Ed Hockley. This guy is jacked, and he would not be caught dead around a blousy sleeve. He would be cut if he could get away with a tank top. He would.
I want to say that I was kind of involved in this game to the point where I was occasionally shouting "Go, go, 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 go!" in what Glenn Weldon insisted on mocking as an inappropriately high voice.
Yeah.
But there was a perhaps more than usual debate about whether Aaron Rodgers is terribly handsome or slightly rabbity.
He is terribly handsome.
Okay. See, and the interesting thing is it kind of broke down. Neither Glenn nor Trey was super into Aaron Rodgers. Linda Holmes is into Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers is good looking.
I was into
Aaron
Rodgers because he seems like a damn good quarterback. Man, that guy's got an arm.
I am into Aaron Rodgers because you talk about Mr. Terrific. He's awesome.
All right. Let me step back here. I think I have a sum up. I think I can sum this up here. Here's what
Thank
is
goodness.
Important. And this goes for football. It goes for comics. It goes for music. It goes for opera, Trey Graham. It goes for philately. It goes for anything about which Shut it. It goes for anything about which there is this passionate intensity. Mm-hmm. If you are the guy who's obsessed with a thing, and I come along and I express a mild, in my case about football, polite interest, and I ask you a question, it is incumbent upon you to give me the 5-second answer. Mm-hmm. Not the 10-second answer, mm-hmm. not the 20-second answer, not the 30-second answer, not the 5-minute answer. Because there is nothing that makes your soul just dry up as just somebody keeping explaining a thing after your interest has
while called. While you right. plot your escape.
If that I had, can only be aimed at me.
No. This is why...
I was going to say, I don't remember explaining anything because I was too busy going, woo!
No. I'm talking about my father, who, when I would ask him, so what's a safety again? I would want to gnaw my own foot off by the time
right.
It just kept going and going and
so
going.
So you felt that we gave you the right amount of information.
This is why the company was great. This is because I would ask a question, I'd get something back, and that was good. That's all I needed.
Well, I'm glad that you could all join us and enjoy some football. Are you ready, as they ask, for some football? I'm glad
you were. They used to ask that. I don't think they ask that anymore.
Well, I'm glad that you all were. And that brings us to our final section of our show, What's Making You Happy This Week. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
The Cartoon Network cartoon Batman Brave and the Bold is coming to an end after 3 seasons. I just wanted to salute it. As much as I despair over the one-note badassening of superheroes and comic books, this show, Brave and the Bold, has always remembered that this stuff is supposed to be fun. It shows how resilient these characters are. The world is big enough to have both Christopher Nolan's grim, violent, swear to me, Batman, and also this bright, primary-colored, downright sunny Batman. It's an all-ages cartoon that embraces the character and humor so thoroughly that when there is an in-joke, and there are a lot, the in-joke works as a joke. It's not simply a reference. It's not simply fan service. It actually is doing work in the show. Obscure characters would get a chance to kind of come out into the sunlight again, and they would remind us why they were awesome. So say what you will about the 70s Super Friends show. It did a lot of damage. Did a lot of damage to characters like Aquaman, from which they are currently recovering.
Oh.
But it kept these characters alive in the public consciousness, and I think that's what this show, Batman Brave and the Bold, is doing for these characters as well. So I salute it as it goes off the air. May choirs of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Outstanding. Very good, Glenn Weldon. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
I'm happy that I live in a world where the worst thing to happen today came out of Cupertino, California. I'm glad that poverty and disease have been conquered and that the famine in Somalia has been addressed. I'm good that the Arab world is at peace and that politicians can be trusted to sit down and cooperate for the nation's betterment. That interreligious understanding has long since flowered and every schoolchild can at last understand the singular beauty of the 12-tone row. I am happy about all of these things because it means that I can devote all of my attention and energies to saying, I have been called an Apple fanboy, and I am sick of hearing about your disappointment that Apple did not give us a new shaped iPhone today. That is all.
Very good.
I want to express my disappointment with Apple for getting rid of the laptops that have Entourage, because that is what has ruined the last week and a half.
I believe you would need to address that disappointment to Microsoft, which was the producer of Entourage.
Whatever. Unfortunately, everything that is making me happy this week revolves somehow around sports, and I will keep it somewhat to a minimum. One of the things, obviously, is the fact that right now many sports stories are being written that sort of revolve around the question of what is with Wisconsin and its greatness. Because the Badger football team is a staggeringly proficient 5-0. The Packers are 4-0. The Brewers, as of this taping, are 2-0 in the playoffs, which is, for me as a somewhat very, very, very casual baseball follower, that is uncharted territory. So the fact that the question is being asked of why is Wisconsin so great fills my tiny black heart with joy. In terms of actual pop culture things that people can actually enjoy if they are already sick of hearing me talk about sports, I contracted a non-happy-making bout of food poisoning over the weekend, during which I writhed in agony while finally starting to catch up with Friday Night Lights. Mm. And as much as I do not recommend contracting food poisoning, I can say, as yet another person on this panel who has finally dug into Friday Night Lights, I can tell you that it is absolutely riveting, and I love it. And I'm only like 3 or 4 episodes in, but I'm already hooked and can't wait to barrel through the whole rest of it.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, it is not every week that I announce that what is making me happy is an episode of Saturday Night Live. That's pretty unusual these days, as a matter of fact. But the lovely and talented Melissa McCarthy, who so recently won herself an Emmy for Mike and Molly, on which, despite the fact that it is a fairly conventional Chuck Lorre sitcom, she is excellent. And also, of course, made a big splash in Bridesmaids this past summer. She hosted this week's episode of Saturday Night Live, and it was one of the better hosting jobs I've seen in quite a while. And there were a few things that were great about it, one of which was they really built the show around her, which is always really a vote of confidence. There are hosts who sort of have sort of supporting roles in sketches that are really carried by the main cast. This was not like that. She was the center of most of the sketches in which she appeared. She appeared in most of the sketches. She was very funny. She was very capable. She got to do a lot of really goofy, interesting stuff. She does not look at cue cards the entire time because she is a pro and she has done this before. And she's a delight. And for years, she showed up on shows like The Gilmore Girls and Samantha Who, and she was excellent and funny. The revelation that she has in her, this gigantic ball of weirdness, which she just was sort of choosing not to use. She was choosing to use this kind of charming, funny, sweet affect, but in fact has this all this other bizarre stuff going on. It has just been a delight to me, and she's a delight to me, and I was very happy to see her do so well and to see her sort of treated so well by that show, and I felt like it really showed off her talent and her ability, and I was very, very happy for her, and that was what made me happy this week, because I actually watched the entire episode.
Wow.
Which, you know, as I said, is sadly rare these days, so that is what is making me happy this week.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn Weldon at G-H Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music that you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And doing many things you did not want to do.
Football.
Thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.